This is another episode of Dear Analyst, and in this episode, I'm super excited to have Mel Ristori on the podcast. She is currently the Director of Analytics and Analytics Engineering, a big topic that I talk about a lot on this podcast, and she's currently working at Trove. Mel, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
I always start off with all my guests. What is your background? How did you get into analytics and up through what you're working on today?
Yeah, sure. Happy to. I didn't take a very straightforward path to get into analytics. And I think that that's common, especially with those of us that have been in the field for a long time. I actually started as an industrial engineer. So that my degree is in industrial engineering. And this was before you could major in things like analytics. So applied statistics would often live under analytics engineering or operations research. So that's really the area that I got more interested in. But at first I started my career as a manufacturing engineer. So process improvements on a manufacturing setting. I realized really though that like my favorite parts about anything to do with industrial engineering was the pieces where I got to just play with the data. So using data to do an analysis, to see how we could optimize something on the production line. And then my job was then to also apply it and make the change happen within the production. But the pieces with the data is what I really like. So then I got my master's, still industrial engineering operations research, but very much more focused on the data side. So eventually I decided to move to the Bay Area, which at the time was really one of the only places you could get a job in like full-time data analysis, whatever analytics, whatever that really meant. So I moved out to the Bay Area, started working with some tech companies, started with Hotwire, which is online travel agency. And that's today we would have called it data science. The term didn't exist. So more like advanced analytics, optimizing the content and email marketing and recommendations. Then eventually I pivoted to go to education technology. So really passionate about trying to do something that has more of a social mission. I love the travel industry, but I really wanted to do something that was a little more focused towards giving back. So it started with Udemy, which I think is really around the time where it was a lot more of like what we would recognize more standard as like a standard analytics team today. So similar to the roles that I've had since, leading cross-functional teams at startups where we're looking at analytics that support all the different business areas. So marketing analytics, product analytics, content analytics in the term in at Udemy. So really trying to understand, but have like a centralized environment where all the analysts kind of work in the same team, but they're specializing in different specific subject areas. I also went to Khan Academy after that, also leading teams there. Also started with analytics engineering there, which another relatively new term in the industry as well. So really trying to get more into like building our own data sets. In many ways, we were already doing that in different teams. It just didn't have that formal title to what the role was. And obviously the rise of DBT has made it a lot more standardized and a lot more intuitive for people with more traditional analytics backgrounds to get more into the engineering side, kind of like that hyper-specialization that's going on within the data industry. So it's really exciting to see that piece of it. Now at Trove, I also have, again, analytics and analytics engineering.
Awesome. And what does Trove do again, by the way?
Oh, of course. So we're actually, it is hard to know us because we kind of work behind the scenes. So if you've ever heard of like REI used gear or Patagonia Warnwear, these are like the used sites that some of our brand partners have. So if you have a used REI item, you can sell it back to REI and have it be resold. We do behind the scenes all of that work. So accepting the products, making sure that we're able to resell them, getting ready for resale, and then listing them on the site. But we do it under the brand of the partners we work with. So that's why Trove's name is not as common.
Gotcha. So you're handling all kind of all the back end operations and logistics for the returns and for the brand.
Exactly. Yes.
Got it. Very wide-ranging career. And one question that I thought about as you were talking was when you first were when you first went into industrial engineering in university and you found that you really loved playing with the data part of, you know, working in that or studying in that field, do you remember any of the tools and systems you used to analyze that type of data? I'm curious if anything like that, you still use that today, or is that all from like a previous time?
Well, so some of it. So SQL, as obviously is, sure, continues to be the main tool. And also for statistical analysis, we were usually using R. So mm-hmm. I believe the kids are still using that today in school, yep, even though Python is becoming more and more common. But a lot of packages on stats still kind of start in R and eventually make their way to Python. But I would say that those were the main tools. And I mean, I always was drawn to statistics, but this was before the idea of like every company having big data. Mm-hmm. So before, you used to be able to do a ton of like, a lot of your statistical analysis was still like in Excel. The data sets just weren't that large. So obviously, as the scale of data has changed, the tools that you use to analyze it have changed, even if the core methodologies obviously have remained relatively the same.
Mm-hmm. Got it. And as you continued in your career, like, do you still find yourself using SQL and R, or are you still in the weeds of that, those tools, or is it not as much these days?
I very much still live in SQL. Mm-hmm. So even, it's hard for me to ever really get completely separated from the data and the team, even now, right, that I'm directing a team that's that can basically do all the analysis on their own. Mm-hmm. But still, anytime I want to investigate or help the team with anything that they're working on, it really goes down to really starting with SQL, even if it's within DBT.
Yeah, no, I think from a common theme I've heard from many guests is learning SQL is kind of like the main tool that will get you into any type of role in analytics if you want to start somewhere. So it seems like that's the common thread, even from when you were studying industrial engineering.
Yeah, that is a good point. I hadn't thought about how that is the one skill that has not really changed. There's mm-hmm. somewhat different flavors of it now. Like, there's more functions you can do now than you could, but the sure. core SQL is still the same.
Right. Well, now that you lead teams of analysts and analytic engineers, one topic that I know we want to talk about was how to build a culture of experimentation, which I know is very kind of a big topic, I think, especially with a lot of companies in Silicon Valley, and it's kind of permeating into other parts of like the Fortune 500. Can you talk to us more about what that means for you and for your team at Trove, and even for previous teams that you worked on?
Yeah, no, of course. This is something that I'm really passionate about because I've seen it work really well, and I've seen it also work not so well. So I think there are a lot of like common pitfalls you can have with experimentation. So one thing that I like to do is really think about it different, like think about it as like the learning culture that you want in a company. And for people to realize that testing and A/B testing specifically is just one way to answer some questions, but it's not the only way. But it's a very powerful tool. There's some really cool things that you can learn in a way that you could never before until we had such a thing as A/B testing, or at least at the scale with the amount of users that now come to sites. Like, the how quickly you can get insights is extremely fast now with A/B testing. Mm-hmm. So I think one of the things now, so at Trove, we're actually starting to implement an A/B testing tool. So this is why it was a bit top of mind. But again, it doesn't mean that we didn't already start to have a learning culture. So trying to do analyses ahead of decisions, trying to do other ways of trying to come up with when you don't have the immediate data available or a test available, how would you quantify the results of something that you're doing? We did a lot of before and after analysis. So if we couldn't split the traffic, we could look what happened before and what happened after, which has pros and cons compared to A/B testing in general. But now that we're actually trying to implement A/B testing, really kind of putting my mind around how do you come up with like your entire program for learning to make sure that you're using the tool in the best way.
Got it. And I guess getting into kind of like the nuts and bolts, like how does like, let's say a leader who leads an analyst team or analytics engineering team, what are the conversations, the meetings, the kind of alignment that you need to do in order to create this culture? Because I'm sure it's not just like, you know, let's all meet and we'll figure it out. But I'm sure there's a lot of different steps you had to take to get there. Curious what some of those steps are if someone wanted to, like, you know, take a kind of a roadmap, if you can call it that, to do it for their own team. Curious how you did it at Trove and previous teams.
Yeah, of course. So we're in the process of it at Trove. So actually trying, mm-hmm. it's very different. So I also did this at Udemy, which was a very different environment because there everyone was extremely data driven and it's a mm-hmm. great team. When I first joined, I like to say like everybody at the company could write some SQL, which actually terrified me. I didn't necessarily see that as a plus. But it was a very different culture where we had like very different challenges. Like everyone was like dying to implement A/B testing and to be hyper analytical. To the point where I think, and it led to some pieces on like analysis paralysis. Like if you didn't have the data or if you didn't have the exact test you could run, like it was difficult to make decisions back at the time. So really kind of implementing and working with the team to really think about like other ways that you would make decisions, other ways. It's very hard for the analytics person to tell you not always to use data, but it often means it's not always the right tool for the job. And here at Trove, we're actually coming from like people who are really hungry for doing data analysis and doing experimentation, but doesn't have as much of that experience of having done it at Trove before. So it's kind of like a coming from a different spot. So people are very excited about it, but also because we don't yet have like this overarching strategy, which is what we're working on, is like, how do we develop a learning plan and then have tests around it? Like everyone in like PMs and marketers, like they have great ideas of tests that we want to run, but they're all relatively like individual tests for like something that we think is really cool. And it's, I think, similar to how you don't build your product strategy from just like a list of cool features you want to build. You also don't build like your learning strategy around that. Like there's some that are great and we'll start learning from them almost immediately, but we also in conjunction have to start building this larger learning strategy. So that is going to be bringing people across that are cross-functional, so that the tool is not just about product or it's not just about our partnership teams. It really is like, as a company, what do we want to learn? One thing that's really interesting at Trove is this idea of buying used items, especially buying them online, is relatively new. So there's a lot that really hasn't been figured out. Like if you're just shopping on REI, like the regular, what we call mainline, so new side of REI, every picture that you see of what they're selling, they have thousands of items behind them. They have all the sizes, all the colors. When we're talking about the resale environment, we could have items that are only one of this item. So like we kind of call it like single SKU. So we might only have one color and one size of this one thing. So you can imagine that sorting through or trying to find what you want is very different because we have a huge array, even if each item is not very deep once you get into it. So the shopping experience is really different. And these are learnings that we can't just look it up or see like, what is the competition doing? Like, I think we're all just starting to learn it. And so this is where I think having a good learning plan would be really interesting. Like, what do we really want to learn? Which in this case, I think it's like, how do you make it easy for customers to find items that they love in this single SKU environment? And I think from that, once we have something like that, like as your strategy, like your main goal of your learning strategy, then you start working with people to really come up with like, what do we most need to understand in order to serve that vision or serve that learning? And you'll find that many of them are really not meant for A/B testing. Like some of them are data analysis you could do today. Some of them are surveys with customers. So user research. Some is market research, seeing what else is out there. And then some of them would fit into A/B testing framework or experimentation frameworks. So I kind of like thinking, starting with that top idea, but you do need to get that buy-in from like the head of product. If you have a marketing team, like the head of marketing team, to kind of really think that we're going to start with like the key questions, and then we can prioritize the sub questions or the sub tests below that. As opposed to, again, just starting with a whole bunch of ideas and like hoping learnings will come out of them.
Right. It's almost kind of like just doing an open brainstorm and hoping something will just come from that. Speaking a little bit more about this notion of reselling online and how it's kind of like a new space. So from hearing you speak, it sounds like the main things that you might want to test are related to it sounds like how the website is structured or the customer experience on the website, or for, I guess, the brand's website. Is that right? Like how to like optimize the, you know, the conversion rates and all that kind of stuff, or are there, is that kind of the top of mind for you in terms of things you want to test and that what analysts and PMs want to test, or are there other more kind of urgent questions that need to be answered?
Interesting that you mentioned the urgency. So I do think there are probably some other urgent ones of things we wanted to test for a long time, or pieces that fit into to really just answer one niche question that we've had about this one thing, or we're working on, like the product team might actively be working on something. And because we now have the A/B testing functionality, we want to see, well, what was its impact? But I would say that at the highest level, we should start with those like big picture questions. And those are the ones that we're formulating. So I would say that first one that is probably the one that I am the most interested in, but we're still going to be working with the other teams just to make sure that their most important questions are going to be part of this strategy. So making sure that what will help product develop products best in the future, that we make sure that we have that side of it. Also within our tools, we create the tools that our warehouse associates use as well, so that we have a part of the product that's like internal facing that will probably have very different learning objectives than the part of the product that is customer facing. So there'll probably be a couple different types of big picture questions that we'd want to get to, but we'll always have the reality of like, well, we really want to do this one thing. It may not fit under this strategy. So, I mean, like with everything, you have to have some amount of flexibility, but you want that to be more the exception eventually, like especially once you have a program up and running. These big questions should be important enough that you would have to have a serious conversation about, do you want to deprioritize one of these big questions to get this urgency one brought in? And sometimes the answer is yes, but at least you would have some kind of framework to be prioritizing it against, as opposed to just a list of experiments that you don't necessarily know what they're going to be laddering up to.
Got it. And I guess one final question in terms of finding a tool to do the A/B testing for, or A/B testing for the questions trying to answer, was the process like, we have these big questions we want to answer in terms of, you know, how do we help the product team develop the product better? Or how do we help the warehouse associates with, you know, this internal tools? Is it coming up with the questions and then kind of just going out to these A/B testing vendors and kind of getting a demo and then seeing how, if it will start satisfy your needs, or is it a little more messy that, or complicated than that? I'm curious how you approach trying to find a specific testing vendor.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And the selecting a vendor was led by our product team. And I think they did a really great job coming up in advance with what are all the criteria that we would want out of an experimentation tool. And so that was a cross-functional effort. So there were obviously some data considerations. There were some product and engineering considerations around like the integration of it. And then some also like the users of it, like who is going to be executing the test? What are they really looking for to make sure that we have it? I'd say most of the top A/B testing platforms out there, like they can do most of like the basics of what you would want. And since we're just starting out with our experimentation platform, it's a program, it's not like we're going to come up with something they haven't seen before. So what really it came down to was like, which one integrated best with the stack that we had, which had the most like user-friendly UIs or features for the PMs that we were going to, or for the users that were going to mostly be executing the tests, But again, the integration with the existing pieces was a big one. I'd say one of the big decisions you should make upfront, though, because I think this makes a huge difference in terms of cost of the tools and also the cost of your engineering implementation team, is deciding whether you only want client-side testing or if you're going to also need back-end testing. So client-side testing is just anything that you can basically do with front-end, which a lot of tools then let you do. You can change the colors of your site, you can change the text, you can move around images, you can like move things around, basically anything that doesn't require code changes in the back end to make something render. So it's very powerful for marketers if you're trying to understand the messaging. Relatively, I think there are a lot of low-hanging fruit that you could recognize with that, because it doesn't require integration with your back end and it doesn't require engineering resources to execute your test. That is the most straightforward and the easiest to implement, and that could be a good way to start into an A/B testing product or a program in your company. But I'd say to get real value out of experimentation, like anything beyond just like the cosmetic, which has its own value. But once you get past that, you're really going to need backend integration. So even if you're just starting client side, make sure you look at what the backend integration would look like in the future to make sure that it's going to be, it's going to align with the technologies that you're using in the backend.
Got it. Makes a lot of sense. I guess kind of switching gears a little bit, one topic that is always a perennial favorite on the podcast is for new graduates or people who are looking to do a pivot into the data analytics field. What kind of advice, recommendations would you have for someone who is just graduated college or thinking about getting into data analytics who may have a non-traditional background, non-traditional data background? I myself was a marketing major and found my way into data analytics, and it's always a windy path for a lot of folks. And I'm curious if you had to give advice for new graduates or people pivoting, what kind of advice would you give them?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I feel like it used to be that you only had people that stumbled into analytics. So like I told you about like my background of like getting into the data side from like the engineering side of things. I've seen marketers, I've seen other people. What shocks me today, and I guess that's more of a, it speaks to the importance of what data and analytics now is in the business world. You can major in analytics. It just didn't exist. Data science, like you can take courses in data science. You can major in data science, machine learning. So I'd say that there are a couple of different ways. So if you actually majored in one of those things, I feel like it's a kind of a different path. It's a little bit maybe more straightforward with the curriculum that you've taken. But I think whether you're shifting or you're just starting out, it's almost, I'd say pretty similar in that you still probably haven't seen whether you took boot camps to go into it. You probably haven't seen if you're just starting out, like, what does it actually mean to be an analyst? Like the data sets are not as clean as you might get in school or in boot camps. Trying to figure out even which questions you should ask. Many times in courses, you already posed the questions, but in analytics, you're just part of a team and you're just trying to like make the company more successful. So like, where do you find those opportunities? Like what kind of data do you even try to get? How do you work with implementing or instrumenting the product that you have to get the data that you want? So I'd say the first thing that I think is most useful is to be really, I guess, open about what you want. There are people starting out that want to just work in Python the whole time and maybe poo-poo the idea of using Excel or G-Sheets or having to do some manual data cleaning. If that is the track, then really looking for like a company that has a built out like machine learning or data science department that is really hyper-specialized. They probably won't have to do a lot of the data cleaning. Will be only working with the more technical skill set. So like that's one end of the spectrum. And those roles you can usually find, they have to be larger companies that would have basically specialization to that point where you can really kind of micro specialize in one set. But for the most part, analytics teams or in startups, you're really looking at people that are going to use the right tool for the job, whatever it is. So if it's Google Sheets, it's Google Sheets. If you're going to just use Python for one-off analysis, but most of the stuff that you do is with your BI tool, kind of being able to switch back and forth. For people that are usually switching, so I don't know your background, especially if you came in like from marketing side, you probably had that real world side. You saw how messy the market data is already joined the analytics side. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there it's a little different in that there you probably are looking at a place that would really value your like analytics chops, like the expertise on like the business intuition side, but is going to help you cultivate the more technical side of it. So I think early stage startups or smaller startups in general would be a good spot for that because really need somebody to think through what they want to do and then have others on the team or you yourself just like find a ways to learn how to actually make that happen. Using data and analytics. So I think there's a little more flexibility to learn the technical side in smaller startups.
Yeah, and just by the nature of it being a small company, you kind of have to wear multiple hats and be comfortable using SQL, Google Sheets, Python, and you know, A/B testing tools, and knowing how they all kind of flow and integrate with each other at the same time, because there's just not many, like you said, specialized teams doing that in a startup because there's not that many resources.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a good point too. So if you don't know what you want out of like the being in data or an analytics can mean so many different things. Like there is no standard definition of what an analyst is or even a data scientist. It could be anything from somebody who just works in spreadsheets all day to somebody who only does Python all day. So again, I think being in a startup is really helpful if you want to figure out where in that spectrum you thrive, like what you like the most, that will give you the most exposure and the most experience. And one thing that I think this is really helpful if you're interviewing is to ask, what is the day-to-day stack, like the tools that they're using? Because I think that really helps frame it. Because again, there's no standardization. It's until you really ask, like, what are the tools you use every day? Like, it's very difficult to really get a sense for how technical is it? How much variety are you going to see in the role? So I think that's a question that tends to be really helpful in trying to figure out what you might be expecting.
Got it. I know we're coming up on time here. I guess I just... one last question, and it's kind of flipping a little around and a little bit personal, because you mentioned if you don't know what you want to do, work at a startup and figure out what your path is. And I'm curious, and if you can share, you know, from being in the analytics field all these years, did you try to find something that you're super passionate about or pigeonholed in, like in Python, or do you still enjoy kind of working across all different levels and tools and teams and frameworks? Curious if you've kind of developed your own kind of thinking about what really kind of lights you up.
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say that I'm a lot more driven about that, like the social impact side of it. I think I'm
interesting. Yeah,
I really would like to make sure that what I spend all my time, like my working hours working on, is towards something better. So I'm really passionate about sustainability. So that's what really drove me to Trove, more so than necessarily the tech stack. But that's also coming from a place that now I'm a director, so I don't have to do the day-to-day work as much. So maybe it's less important what the day-to-day tools are. But I do also make sure that I look for the work still has to be like, I have to keep learning. And so if we're not continuously open to adapting new tools as they're relevant to the team. So working with like very old legacy technology is just not where my interest is. And so I would be looking, for the most part, looking at newer companies, maybe startups, or just recently came out of being startups, to like open to new stacks and new technologies.
Got it. Yeah. Well, I guess being in Silicon Valley, that's the right place to be. It's to constantly find the new technologies that are erupting.
Yeah. It's definitely the highest growth area as well. So that is also helpful.
Right. Well, Mel, thank you so much for sharing all your insights about building a culture of experimentation and all the things you're working on at Trove, and also for helping the new analysts out there or soon to be analysts figure out ways to get into the field. Anything else you want to mention to the audience before we sign off here?
Well, first, thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
Absolutely.
I'd say, especially just closing out on that idea of like for people that are trying to get into the space, despite the recent economic downturns, it still is a really good market to be looking for a role. Mm-hmm. So I would say really like, if you're still on the job search, like really look at it and really still make sure that it's the right fit for you. Things might change. Obviously, we're in a very strange environment right now. So the luxury might not be there forever, but right now mm-hmm. it's still difficult to hire. Like I'm trying to hire right now for analysts. So I can see that it's still a little bit of a candidate's market out there. Mm-hmm. So to make sure that they find something that really will speak to them as you're looking to enter that new career.
Got it. Okay. Well, Mel, thank you so much for your insights, and maybe we'll do a round 2 at some point in the future.
Yeah, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.